Many people who watch this blame the parents. And I have to tell you, you don't get grooming.
And so there was this thought when those two were first accused of, oh, well, they can't be sexually attracted to children. They can get anyone they want.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey y'all, it's Francie. I have some really exciting news. You can now listen to our back catalog and new episodes of the show completely ad-free on Stitcher Premium. In addition to our ad-free episodes, you can also listen to tons of other ad-free Wondery shows. Plus, with Stitcher Premium, you'll get access to hundreds of hours of original content, audio documentaries, and exclusive bonus episodes from some of your other favorite podcasts. You can sign up now for a free month of Stitcher Premium by going to stitcherpremium.com/Wondery and using the promo code Wondery. Then once you're signed up, just download the Stitcher app for iOS or Android and start listening. That's stitcherpremium.com/Wondery and promo code Wondery.
Hello and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clemente, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor, and writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds. But that, my friends, is coming to a close soon.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah. And with me today is...
Hi, everybody. It's former state and federal prosecutor Francie Hakes. And as you can hear, everyone, in spite of what some of you have said on social media, I have not murdered Jim. He's alive and well.
Well, alive anyway. The well part, I've been sort of under the weather and producing my episode of Criminal Minds and running around shooting a couple other shows and preparing for major events that are about to occur. So we're really excited about things and we'll be talking to you about them as they come up. But today, we're going to talk about one of my cases.
We are. And I think in a very big sense, it's one of everyone's cases, really.
Really. It involves someone that everybody in the world probably knows about.
Well, let's just get right in then. Everyone's going to, I think, be fascinated by this discussion. I've been promising them for weeks that we would do it. So where were you in your career when you first heard about or got this particular case?
Well, this is an interesting one, Francie, because this one started far before I had a career. This is a case that began when I was just a little kid. And I sort of grew up with this case. And little did I know, as time would go on, that the case would actually come to me when I was an FBI profiler as well.
Well, that's a heck of a teaser, Jim. It's almost like you're a writer or something.
Oh, really? Well.
So tell me what you mean. You said it began when you were a little kid.
When I was a kid, I remember getting my first transistor radio. And for people out there who weren't born before 1985, no, they know what I'm talking about. But people after 85 probably have no idea what I'm talking about. Mm-mm. A transistor radio was, you know, you put batteries in it and you turned to a few stations that you had. It was an AM radio, and then eventually FM radio came out. Much cooler songs and stuff for the kids.
For the kids.
And I remember way back when listening to this group and then the solo artist named Michael Jackson. And I loved Michael Jackson's music. And we were pretty much the same age. I think he was 3 months older than me. And here's this young guy, like, traveling around the world singing with his brothers. And I had brothers and sisters, and he had brothers and sisters, and I really related to him a lot, and that was a great thing. But I remember if we fast forward a number of years, Michael Jackson had a very illustrious solo career and moved on. And I remember with anticipation the release of the Thriller video. And that was like the biggest thing. They spent $1 million on this video, and it was the biggest budget ever on a video, and all this theatrics and scripting and makeup.
And they used horror man Vincent Price to do some narration of it. Right. It was huge.
I remember my brother was working for Sony at the time, and so he got me in to see the video before it was released. And I remember seeing it and being blown away and saying, this is changing everything. But then I also remember a short time after that when I think I saw the Grammys and Michael Jackson was with a little boy. I think he might have even carried him up on stage. And I turned to my brother and I said, I'm really worried about Michael Jackson. He said, what do you mean? And I said, he doesn't seem to have age-appropriate friends. He says he loves children, but he only has boys around him. The kid that he's holding is actually older than he looks. And that's not a real good dynamic for a, let's say, 35-year-old or 40-year-old guy to be with a kid like that.
Well, it's not normal for that to be your best friend or your closest friends or your major friend group are little children when you're a grown-up.
Right. And so what I explained to my brother at the time was that if, as Michael Jackson says, he loves children and he has these loving relationships with these boys exclusively, that he's a human being and human beings are sexual beings. And it's not a huge leap for somebody like that to form a loving bond with someone and then want to express that in a sexual way. It bothers me. It worries me. And so we watched, you know, as this kept happening over and over and over again. It was a new kid almost every year. Some hung on for a number of years or would come back and so forth. And then the allegations started coming out. And it just confirmed everything that I was thinking, not only as an individual, but by this time, as an expert witness in the era of child sexual victimization.
Well, I mean, I think, Jim, that it's in context, especially for our younger listeners who weren't, you know, sort of old enough in the 80s, for example, to understand the massive appeal and the massive fame of Michael Jackson. People, it's like, well, and they'd have to be even older to remember the Beatles, which I don't remember the Beatles. I'm not old enough to remember the Beatles when they first came here. But my understanding is it's exactly the same thing. Everywhere he would go, people would go bananas. I mean, I remember he did a tour of Japan and the Japanese were fainting. I mean, people went crazy for him. He was so well liked.
The best thing I could do to analogize is if you take every single one of the influencers and YouTubers and Instagrammers, everybody that is famous, every rapper, every singer, every actor, every single person that you know in your universe, every iconic person that you know, and put them together, that's Michael Jackson's level of fame. He was the sole, universally liked, universally listened to, universally admired person on the planet. And he engineered all that pretty much by himself. And that was something that nobody else has ever done before or since. And so it was really difficult for me to think these things about him. But I thought these things based on interpreting his behavior, not out of a whim. And then when people started making allegations against him and there were $1 million settlements and there were repeated people coming forward and he claimed, oh, people are just attacking me, all this other stuff. But, you know, what was interesting is that never happened to Elvis Presley. That never happened to Prince. That never happened to David Bowie. That never happened to Elton John. And you would think if that were the case, that these guys who were much more flamboyant in their lifestyle would have been more susceptible to it. But it never happened to them. Why? Because they weren't sleeping alone with boys, 7, 10, 13, 15-year-old boys who were not related to them. And so it didn't happen to them because they weren't doing that. It is the sleeping with boys that is an issue. And no, it is not okay to share your bed as an adult male with an adolescent or pre-adolescent boy.
Who's not related to you.
Exactly. So this guy did it over and over and over again. And so it kind of brings us to the current situation, which is Leaving Neverland. And Leaving Neverland, if you haven't seen it, is a documentary done by a British documentarian who tells the story of Wade Robson and James Safechuck. These are two now young men who, when they were children, 7 and 10 years old, they met Michael Jackson. They were enthralled by Michael Jackson. The world was enthralled by Michael Jackson. And these were two boys who idolized him, and he formed very close relationships with them.
Well, and for Wade
and their families.
Well, and for Wade Robson in particular, he had been obsessed with Michael Jackson for a couple of years. As a small boy, he had joined a dance troupe. He was
doing
an imitator. Yeah, he was like a Michael Jackson impersonator as a 5 and 6 year old. And so by the time he's from Australia, and by the time he met Michael Jackson in Australia after winning a contest, Michael Jackson was, I mean, not just a larger than life figure to him, but someone he literally thought about and emulated almost every minute of every day.
Right. So it was huge. And so what's amazing about this documentary and what's amazing about the discussion that is generated is that people actually understand or are starting to understand more fully what grooming is. And one of the things that Wade and James have both said in the documentary and then in interviews with Oprah afterwards and in public interviews, that their grooming started long before they even met him. Because Michael Jackson groomed the world. He did it in a way, in what we categorize as a pillar of the community offender. This is somebody who has risen to the top of whatever field they're in, whether it's in a community or the world like Michael Jackson. And they use that celebrity or that status to get access to kids, to lower people's defenses. Many people who watch this blame the parents. And I have to tell you, you don't get grooming if you're blaming the parents. Because what groomers do is they lower the defenses of the parents and guardians and teachers and schools and community groups and sports teams and organizations, because they know that people in the general public believe that if you're a good person, you can't actually be sexually attracted to children. And that's not the case.
Oh,
you can be the best person in the world and still have a sexual attraction to children. And that is the insidious nature of these crimes. There is no way to look at a person or, you know their heart or trust them completely, love them, and still guarantee that they're not sexually attracted to children.
One of the most important things we do for our health every day is brushing our teeth. Yet most of us don't do it properly. Quip is a better electric toothbrush created by dentists and designers. Quip was designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, and even enjoyable. I also love Quip because they've got automatically delivered brush heads on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. And the multi-use cover, I use it all the time when I travel. I can mount it to a mirror, I can unmount it and slide it over my bristles, so when it's at a hotel, I'm always in hotels, I don't have to worry about any sanitary issues, my brush bristles are covered. And that's why I love Quip, and why they're backed by over 20,000 dental professionals. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/bestcase right now, you get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/bestcase. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all your profits. Plus, there's no account minimum deposit needed to get started. You can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections, such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of Best Case, Worst Case a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at bestcase.robinhood.com.
Let's talk about that sexual attraction. Where does it come from? I know people have said, you know, well, it's evil. The devil does it. Other people have said it's learned behavior. But the best minds in the field of psychology and psychiatry and human behavior believe that sexual attraction is built genetically and in brain chemistry, that the combination of those things is what gives a person their particular sexual attraction. Now, you can learn behaviors and you can avoid behaviors, but the sexual attraction itself is something that is intrinsic to a human being. However, and this is a huge point, some people are capable of multiple sexual attractions, and we call them sexually diverse. Somebody who is capable of being sexually attracted by an adult, an age-appropriate adult, and a child at the same time. They may also be sexually attracted to inanimate objects or animals or any sort of other thing. Those people, those sexually diverse people, are capable of tricking people by being in a sexual relationship with somebody who's age appropriate, but also being sexually attracted to children. And that is another level of problem here. So just because someone is married with kids doesn't mean that they're not also sexually attracted to children.
Or like some of the actors that we've talked about in our training classes, Mark Salling from Glee, Corey Sly from the soaps, who were accused of having sexual attraction to children. One of them had child pornography. The other was accused of sexually assaulting a young girl in his own family while they were on vacations. They both were known to date beautiful Hollywood starlets, age-appropriate women. And so there was this thought when those two were first accused of, oh, well, they can't be sexually attracted to children. They can get anyone they want. It's actually the same thinking, Jim, the same wrong thinking that people have about rape. When the rapist, the accused rapist, is someone who's a physically attractive person, they don't need to rape. They can have sex with whoever they want. And of course, that's not what it's about.
No, it's not at all. But speaking about sexual attraction to children, the thing is, when we say that it is driven by your genes and your brain chemistry, people might think, oh, well, then they don't have a choice. Well, then why are they doing it in private? The fact is, if they didn't have a choice, if it was behavior that they had no control over, they would do it right in front of everybody. But you know, they don't. And they scheme. And they plan. And they manipulate.
And they obsess.
And they obsess. But Leaving Neverland was a perfect depiction of how Michael Jackson manipulated these kids and their families, played on their sympathies, played on their loyalty and their trust and their love, and used them over and over and over again, and threw them away when he didn't want them, when somebody else came into the picture, pulled them back in when he needed them to testify for them or swear on an affidavit, and made promises to them again, and then they disappeared again in his life.
Well, it was obviously quite manipulative. And what's interesting, Jim, is, you know, I have to address, Maureen and I talked about this case a couple of episodes ago. And since then, we've had a lot of people write in to us on social media, especially our Facebook page, which we love and please keep doing, asking about our discussion on the parents, and in particular, Wade Robson's parents, who came to visit the United States when Wade was, I don't know, seven. He'd met Michael Jackson, I think, for the first time when he was around five over in Australia. And so when they made a trip here, they were invited to come to Neverland Ranch. And after two or maybe 3 days, the parents were scheduled to take their two children and go off to the Grand Canyon. And Jackson invited Wade to stay behind. Mm-hmm. Wade reportedly told his parents that he wanted to stay behind. And so the parents left him there by himself, 7 years old, by himself at Neverland Ranch with Michael Jackson, who was at that point, basically a complete stranger. And while I certainly understand what you're talking about grooming, and I agree with you, Michael Jackson was maybe the best I've ever seen at grooming the world, because today there are still people who refuse to believe that he ever sexually abused children. But even in the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, Jim, when this was happening, it is absolutely impossible for me to ever understand, even knowing what I know about grooming, how parents of a seven-year-old could leave that seven-year-old with a grown man stranger for a week. And this is before cell phones. So there was no way for that child to contact them if he wanted them.
You're calling him a stranger. They did not consider Michael Jackson a stranger. That's part of grooming the world. That's what I'm saying. It's the fact that they believed all the hype, everything that was out there. And another thing that they believed, it wasn't like this was day one of Michael Jackson being with their son, Wade. It wasn't day two or day three. But not only that, he was sleeping in the same room with Michael Jackson. I am certain that Wade's parents believed that if Michael tried anything with their son would have told them.
Oh, no doubt.
Because they didn't understand grooming.
Agreed.
They didn't understand compliant victimization. They didn't understand the conspiracy of silence around it, because Wade loved, and I'm putting air quotes here, Michael Jackson. He loved the image of Michael Jackson. He loved what he thought was Michael Jackson. He didn't understand that the reason why Michael Jackson wanted to spend time with him, why Michael Jackson loved him, was because he was a child who Michael Jackson was sexually attracted to. He didn't understand that until he had a child, until he grew up and became a father and understood how vulnerable his own child was, and started thinking, well, if Michael Jackson did that stuff to him, it would be horrible. And so this happens a lot with victims. They don't feel that what happened to them is important enough, that it warrants a big hullabaloo. They feel that, though, when they see it aimed at someone they love and have the responsibility to take care of somebody they brought into the world.
Well, and that happened in a lot of my cases as a state prosecutor, Jim, sexual abuse cases, where we'd have a child disclose only because she saw the offender's attention turn to her sister, her younger sibling.
Mm-hmm.
And then she felt, well, now I have to stop it. So that is extremely common, where you're absolutely right. They don't talk about it until and unless someone else's life or emotional health is at stake. But, you know, what I wanted to ask you about were some of these details that you know that a lot of the public doesn't know. And there's been some people on Twitter who have commented to you who clearly have no clue what they're talking about with child sexual victimization and do not understand what the context of this is, and really all the facts. They don't care about the facts, let's be clear. But so let's take Wade and Jimmy out of it for a second. So we understand what they've done. We've talked about their victimization. The documentary thoroughly describes in great and credible detail their allegations against Jackson. But I think what many people that have defended him, including the celebrities like Barbara Streisand and Diana Ross, which is just shocking and disgusting, who've defended him, all go back to one thing. And that is the earlier case that you mentioned, the case that was actually brought against Michael Jackson. There were all these civil suits, and they were settled and hushed up and non-disclosure agreements. But But I want to talk to you about that criminal case.
Okay, you're talking about the case of Gavin Arvizo. And the thing about that case, it came to me when I was in the behavioral analysis unit, and the FBI got involved as assisting the local law enforcement in understanding the case, doing the investigation, putting together the prosecution, and so forth.
And so, just to be clear, that's before the criminal trial.
Yes.
So you guys were involved early on in the underpinnings of that case.
Yes. And not only was Gavin Arvizo involved in that case at that time and being interviewed by the FBI and local law enforcement, but so was Jordy Chandler. And Jordy Chandler is the boy whose father negotiated, I think, a $24 million settlement with Michael Jackson after Michael Jackson sexually victimized Jordy Chandler and got them to agree to settle a case and to not bring charges against Michael Jackson, which, again, Jordy was a child. His father made that determination.
So $24 million has bought, or, you know, is easy to buy silence with $24 million.
Right. Exactly. So the fact is that Jordy was told his story to law enforcement, and separately, Gavin Arvizo told his story to law enforcement, and they meshed perfectly in terms of grooming and sexual activity and descriptions of Michael Jackson's erect penis and so forth.
That's what we call corroboration.
Yes, it is corroboration. And although Jordy at some point agreed to participate in that prosecution, he backed out of it because there were serious family issues and ramifications, and he did not want to put his family through that. Although he did agree to, if the case was not successful in California, that he would actually pursue a federal prosecution against Michael Jackson, because Michael Jackson traveled with him interstate and sexually victimized him in other states.
Well, and those, and there's, I want to make sure our audience understands those charges. That's what I prosecuted as a prosecutor at the U.S. Attorney's Office, carry tremendous penalties.
Yes.
So Michael Jackson could have faced federal prosecution for crossing state lines with intent to engage in sexual activity with a child, which also called illegal criminal sexual activity. And those carry anywhere from a 10-year mandatory minimum to a 30-year to life. Right. So they're very serious charges that could have been brought.
I have no doubt in my mind that if Jordy Chandler were able to testify in that case, and if Wade Robson and James Safechuck had been able to come forward and testify at that time, and I'm not blaming them for not doing it, I'm just telling you, if that happened, that Michael Jackson would be alive today and in prison. The situation was that Jordy Chandler had agreed to go forward with a federal prosecution if the case in Santa Clarita was not successful in convicting Michael Jackson. However, that case was dragged out and delayed over and over again until the point where Jordy Chandler's statute of limitations had expired. He could no longer bring a federal case. And because of how the case basically disintegrated with respect to Gavin Arvizo, that case wasn't brought forward either. So Michael Jackson did not get prosecuted federally. Would he have been convicted federally? I don't know, because it's very difficult to convict a celebrity in the first place.
True.
And an iconic celebrity, it's much more difficult to convict. However, I did believe Jordy Chandler. I did believe Gavin Arvizo. I did believe Star Arvizo, who was a witness in Gavin's case. I do believe Wade Robson. I do believe James Safechuck. And I do believe there are multiple other boys that were victimized by Michael Jackson and groomed by Michael Jackson. And they have not felt safe to come forward because they believe that they will be attacked.
Well, and they will be attacked because Jimmy and Wade have been attacked. But what I want to ask you, Jim, this is such an important question to me. Why do you believe them? I know it's more than just that they corroborate each other. I know it's more than that. So what else is there that you know about this case, or that you know about Michael Jackson generally? What other evidence was there out there that tells you that he was sexually attracted and sexually interested in children besides just the testimony of multiple children, which should be and is legally enough.
But it's not just the testimony of them, but internally, their testimony is reliable in that it all makes sense in terms of the behavior of somebody who's sexually attracted to children. It's not just somebody saying, oh, I want to get money, so I'm going to say this. Well, you don't know as a child, and you're being interviewed as a child in some cases or as an adult later, but you don't know how the behavior actually stacks up to somebody like me who's an expert in this field. And when you tell me how the sequence of events from day one to the day we're sitting there talking to each other, everything that was done, the way you tell me it and how the pieces fit together internally in your story, and then how they corroborate the other victims and their stories, when we know what was actually put out in the public was just, you know, scratching of the surface. Now, with Leaving Neverland, we have a very detailed account. That's the kind of account I had in the Arvizo case and in the Jordy Chandler case and in cases of other people who I know their story, but they did not want to testify. And I can't, in good conscience, out them. I can't say, well, this person doesn't want to tell you, but this person actually came forward, told his story, but did not want to testify. So for all those reasons, then there's the way Jimmy Safechuck describes sleeping in Michael Jackson's loft bed in his bedroom and the bed in the play area in the attic and the bed in the train station and the bed here and the bed there.
And all those things are corroborated by actual physical existence of those things where he said they
absolutely
were.
Absolutely. And knowing that Michael Jackson had sort of a hallway, you know, we could only call it the masturbation room because he had an easy chair. He had a bottle of a jarred Vaseline. He had videos. He had hard drives of computers that were deliberately fried in that room. And I don't know what was on them, but I have a good idea what was on them.
Well, destruction of evidence certainly indicates consciousness of guilt.
Yes. And then the sort of art books that, you know, has pictures of nude boys in it.
I just want to be clear. Jim put air quotes around art
right.
books.
Right. There are actually books that are artistic in nature where people photograph boys, girls, men, women, naked. I'm not offended by that. I don't think it's a crime in every case, but people who are sexually attracted to those children use it in a criminal way. They exploit those children. And I've had defense attorneys shove books like that in my face while I'm on the stand, trying to get me to say that this is horrific and horrible and all that. And I've explained to them, the photographer may not have had any problem. The people who buy that book in general may not have any problem. But other people who buy that book, other people who use that book, use it for their own sexual gratification, and that is or should be a crime.
Well, and I have to say, I unlike you, I know it's going to shock everyone. I disagree with you slightly. I am offended by those books of naked children. I don't care what anyone says about it. I just don't see a good explanation for that to me, because I understand what people say about, oh, the nude body is beautiful. Agreed. So look at adult nude bodies. You don't need to look at children's nude bodies. Well, I feel like there's only one reason for it.
No, I get it. And I almost agree with you. But I also understand that there are other people in the world who literally do not find that sexually attractive, but find it artistically attractive. And I am willing to believe that that actually exists. Maybe you don't believe that that actually
exists. It's hard for me to believe that.
Okay, but, you know.
But I get it. I understand what you're
but
saying.
But anyway, be that as it may, the fact is that Michael having that book, and, you know, you're going to hear all sorts of stories, and there are people on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else in social media claiming facts that are not actually true about what he had and what he didn't have in his house. or on his computers. But I do know facts about what he had on his computers, what he showed to minors on his computer, and what he talked about. And hopefully, in the near future, more of that information will come out.
I certainly hope so. I mean, I guess, Jim, what we should say, because I want to talk to you more about the interviews that were done with Wade and Jimmy by Oprah Winfrey, about your own appearance on Oprah Winfrey. But I think we're going to have to save that for our next episode. So I have to ask you our normal question. You were involved in the prosecution of Michael Jackson that ended in an acquittal. He was not found guilty, which, can I just say really quickly, I hate to go on a tangent, but I just want to make it clear to everyone, not guilty does not mean innocent.
Or exonerated.
Not guilty just means not proven guilty. We really ought to change that in this country.
In other words, the prosecution in this date, time, and place was not able to prove to a jury to the extent that they would say beyond a reasonable doubt this person is guilty. That's what a not guilty verdict means.
It is, but the prosecutors believed it. A grand jury believed it. The cops believed it. The FBI believed it. So there were a lot of people who did believe it. It was just a jury.
Right. But I was going to be testifying as an expert witness in that trial. Unfortunately, I got cancer and I was going through treatment during the whole time of the trial. I had to have a bone marrow transplant. So I was not able to do that. And I know that people say that that may not have made any difference, but I believe I could have explained to the jury in great detail how the information that they misinterpreted actually supported the guilt and should have supported a guilty verdict for Michael Jackson, as opposed to not supporting it. And I would have loved to have been able to sit down with Wade Robson at the time and Jimmy Safechuck and a number of other boys and young men that were in the company of Michael Jackson during that time. And I would still love to sit down with them and talk to them about this, because I believe I can explain to them much more, not only having been a victim myself, but having become an expert in this field. I could explain to them and hopefully help them understand a little better what their behavior was. It's totally understandable. And I totally understand why some people are still denying that anything happened and why it took 10, 15, 20, 30 years for other people to come forward and say what happened to them, because it is a natural progression. They're being sexualized early actually created in them a major obstacle for coming forward. And so we can talk about that more in our next episode of Best Case, Worst Case. Until then, thank you for listening.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production. Produced by Jim Clementi at Empire Studios, LA. Engineered and edited by Mike Thal. Music composed and performed by Simba Sumba. And hosted by Wondery.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Stories about child sexual abuse can make us feel powerless. But the good news is that there are organizations working to prevent abuse and keep kids safe. Darkness to Light and their Stewards of Children Prevention Training has trained more than 1.4 million adults to protect, recognize, and react responsibly to child sexual abuse.
But there's more work to do, and with their 4 million by 2020 goal, Darkness to Light is setting their sights on training 4 million adults around the country to keep kids safe. By donating to Darkness to Light, you can help reach this goal that will make communities across the country safer places for kids.
It starts with you. Visit www.d2l.org today to give. That's www.d2l.org.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.